The following content may be distressing. Listener discretion is advised. If you need to, contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Emotional abuse. It's not a simple, quick thing to discuss if you want to do it properly because of its insidious nature, but it is important to have an understanding of due to the detrimental and long-lasting effects it can have on a person's mental and physical health and in turn their happiness. You're about to hear from Kerry Atherton. She's the founder of Empower Life Solutions and Stories of Hope Australia. She's also an inspirational speaker and addictions recovery mental health coach counsellor. It was about this time last year when we met, I said to you, I want to be a voice as opposed to a victim. I want everyone to know who these narcissistic, emotionally abusive people are. So ideally, in a pie in the sky world, there are no more victims. And you were helping me come to terms with the fact that I was in one of these relationships and, like many, not even aware of it until it was too late. You've got a huge story yourself. I would say a lot of people that went through what you've gone through haven't come out on the other side. In some cases, you know, yeah. It's just too much. It's just too overwhelming. So we're really grateful that you will tell your story today and how you've managed to pull through such, I was going to say adversity, but that's not even, it's not a big enough word to cover what you've experienced. How did you get to this point?
Well, I think that for me, I was a very emotionally damaged person, and that was as a result of my childhood. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a home with two alcoholic parents, and they were very loving, but I was full of fear, full of insecurity, and I myself, as we talked about, went on to become a pill addict and an alcoholic. Now, having been sober in AA for 37 years, I've heard thousands and thousands and thousands of stories of people that go through addictions. And a common thing that I've often heard is that these people feel like they never fitted into the world. And so, like, there's this deep sense of shame from an early age. There's a lot of different reports about whether people that are alcoholics in particular are born with that. There's a thought that, yes, there is a gene that they're born with, but that learned behaviour, so as if they grow up in a home where they may have been born with a predisposition to addictions, don't ever see their parents drinking, there's a chance they may never drink. But having said that, a lot of the people that I hear in the rooms of AA have said, I felt like I never fitted in. I felt like I was born like this. So carrying through my life with me was this sense of shame and feeling less than, never fitting in. And
you felt not valued.
Yeah, I just felt like there was something wrong with me. And I remember walking into preschool and feeling like an alien with two heads and feeling like everyone was staring at me. And yeah, and I think people that have got alcoholic parents, I hear this very, very common for them to feel like they're not good enough.
Yeah.
It's a common trait that children of alcoholic parents have, and it's a belief that they form that they're not good enough and they're not worthy. So I think when we think about people who enter into relationships or attract abusive relationships into their life, I hear so often in my counselling, people that I work with, that they're people that don't, I've got to be careful how I word this, but a lot of people that have attracted abusers have told me that they lacked confidence. And something that controlling and abusive people seek in a partner is somebody who's vulnerable and lacks confidence.
Well, they seek being wanted by these people, I guess. Again, like, carefully put, as a general statement, because they, I guess, feel so undervalued. So in my situation, I was so used to, and a psychologist said to me that I would seek out dysfunction because I found it normal. So if you treat me well, I'm like, what? You know, but if you're treating me with disdain and contempt, I'm like, oh, well, I better please you because I'm not good enough for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
I think too, when I was 9, I was sexually molested by a pedophile when I was on holidays in Port Macquarie. And something happens when that happens to a child, it's almost like this false belief sets in that there must be something wrong with me. And it's kind of hard to kind of shake that from then on in. And so from an early age, like 15, I had my first boyfriend, but I attracted guys mainly in my life that abused me in nearly every way possible because I didn't believe I deserved any better than that.
And you had, from your childhood, found it, I guess, normal to a degree.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wasn't abused by my parents. I had a very loving relationship with my dad, and but I lacked nurturing from my mum because she was an alcoholic. She drank till I was 12, and she hadn't been nurtured by her own parents.
So the cycle continued.
Yeah, and this is something that I say to many parents when I'm, you know, doing parent seminars or counselling parents. And I say this to kids that I work with as well, that we as parents are just big kids growing up and the only role models we had was the ones that we had.
Yeah.
And we're learning as we go. So my mum was a great mum and she was the best mum she could be, but she wasn't nurturing until she stopped drinking and started to actually get help for herself and get herself together. Yeah. And I think too, when you don't have nurturing from a mum as well, that can kind of send a bit of a message of, oh, is there something wrong with me?
Why am I good enough? I see the kids at school, their mum's done this, and my mother,
And my mum was an acts of service person, so she tried to show me that she loved me through doing things for me, but I'm a words of affirmation. Like, words that people speak to me can either damage me or build me up, as it is with everyone. And that was my love language from an early age, and, I seem to attract abusive relationships. And the big abusive relationship came on the back of, well, I was 17 and I had yet another boyfriend. And for me, relationships were something that I needed to give myself a sense of value. I sought my value in relationships. I felt that if I didn't have a boyfriend, that would mean I was totally worthless. And because of that, it sounds terrible, but in my mind, I guess I just kind of accepted whoever came along because I didn't want to be left on my own and I really sought to be loved.
Yeah.
And so I would attract these types of people who were controlling and who wanted me as a possession. And, you know, in one sense that made me feel like, well, I believed the lie that they cared about me, but really it was for their own satisfaction and ego. And so when I was 17, I had another boyfriend who I went away on a holiday with, and my alcoholism had totally spiraled out of control. I was having blackouts. I was waking up on fences when I'd go out to parties, not knowing how I got there, and having, you know, I was physically sick. I was mentally and emotionally sick. I was highly addicted to prescription medication and pills, and I was mixing the both. I'd had a near-death experience after an overdose. And went away on holidays with this guy who was in the army. And he was displaying abusive traits, but he hadn't hit me. So I didn't think that it was that bad. I thought, and I was used to that type of behaviour from certain boyfriends. But then we went away on holiday and he actually started punching me at a caravan park in a waiting room where there was families. And I came back from that holiday and I had just totally hit rock bottom. I just thought, I can't live anymore. I don't see any way out. I don't know how I can go on. This is how my life's ended up, and I planned to commit suicide that day. And I heard a loud voice say, don't do it. If you hang on a bit longer, you'll find happiness one day. And I believed myself that day that that was, you know, the voice of God. And I, instead of killing myself, I actually rang up a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went along to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and within 2 days I had met the ultimate abuser. Somebody who told me that they would care for me in AA, look after me, that they had 3 years sobriety up. And this is something that I hear so often from women that end up in abusive relationships. The person at the beginning of the relationship is just seems like the knight in shining armor, treats them like a princess. He bought me flowers, took me out for dinner, spoke beautiful words, like just seemed like the most caring person that I could ever meet in my life. And there was a couple of warning signs, which I don't know how I didn't pick up on, but because I was so emotionally sick and so desperate for support, one was that he took me on a guided tour of his parents' house and showed me all the walls that he'd punched in there, all the holes that he'd punched in their walls. And he said, but I'm different now. I've changed. I don't drink anymore. I'm a different person. And I thought, oh, well, that's great. You know, he's changed. And then after about 4 weeks into the relationship, my mum challenged him on something and he screamed at her and told her to F off. Mm-hmm. And so he was kind of banned from our house. And so I ended up moving in with him after about 3 or 4 months. And the day I moved in with him was the day that I saw a totally different person.
Yeah.
And the abuse started.
Yeah. Because these sorts of people, by doing that, that's almost in their mind, they're telling you who they are. And so it's okay because I've told you. And you're the one that's made them have to do it, is, I guess, one of the things, well, at least in my experience, that was it. He's like, well, I told you I did it before. Now you've made me like this. I'm like, well, I haven't done anything. And then you go, well, you're so sad and not wanting to hurt this person that you love. You just do whatever it takes. And you don't want to tell anyone about it either because that's just going to make him angrier.
Yeah. And there was like two sides to this person. I actually stayed in this relationship for 3 years. And on one hand, I would see a very controlling, abusive, narcissistic, self-centered, selfish, all about them person. But then after I had been abused and screamed at and yelled at and everything, I would see like a child come out and he would start crying and saying, oh, I don't know how I could ever treat you like that, and telling me everything I wanted to hear. I'll change, you know, I'll change. I promise I'll never do that again. And you know, I'm sorry. I'm damaged, you know, from my past. And then I would feel sorry for him.
Exactly.
And then the threats would come too. If you leave me, I'll kill myself.
Yeah.
So then I felt trapped because I thought he would make me feel responsible first for the abuse and the berating that I'd received. And then I would feel responsible for the fact that if I leave and he kills himself, then it's my fault.
Mm.
And I think this is a reason why a lot of women stay in abusive relationships, and they're also terrified of, if I leave, what's going to happen? Is this person going to stalk me?
Yeah.
Are they going to get me after I leave? Am I going to be abused even more? But the reality is, staying in the relationship, you will be abused.
Mm.
So better to get out, because a lot of these types of controlling people are actually bullies, and they're very controlled at where they abuse you. They do it when no one else can see.
Yeah, they're
which
amazing.
Proves that they're in control of their actions and their behavior.
And that's confronting too, because to your friends and family, well, or whoever they don't show this person to, you fear that you wouldn't be believed.
That's right.
In any way, you'd be laughed at. And if that happens, then he can go, yes, see, she is crazy. And then it just makes you look like the demon, the terrible person. So you're in a horrible position, and you yourself are hurting because of how badly you've been treated.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of people, there's always, you hear, well, why do they stay? I hope from hearing this sort of thing, people can understand that what can you do sometimes, but you've just got to wait to find that strength, that inner strength, I guess, from yourself. How did you go from there? What did you do when you came to this, I guess, epiphany that is never going to stop?
I think I've actually blocked a lot of it out, you know. I just guess that there's a saying in the counselling and psychology arena that pain is the greatest motivator of change. And taking in mind that through this 3 years, I was actually recovering from my addictions as well. So I was trying to stay sober and clean through this time while living in a terribly abusive relationship. And I guess I started to see escalation in his behaviour, and I clearly remember one particular night. Now, one thing that controlling and abusive partners do is they try and isolate
you from your friends and family.
They isolate you from your friends and family. I didn't have my license, so I was totally dependent on him for whatever
transport,
wherever we went. And we didn't go out very much. That would often be a form of punishment if I'd said something that he didn't like. It was like, oh, well, I was going to take you here, but I'm not taking you now because you did this and because you said this. And it sounds so silly because McDonald's is the last place I'd want to go out for dinner these days. But back then, living with this particular person, it was like a luxury.
Yeah.
And so this one particular night, I was so sick of staying home and I was so bored, and we were going out to McDonald's for dinner, and then I must have said something that he didn't like, and he said, "We're not going now." And I actually kicked up a stink and I started saying, "I really want to go out. You know, I'm so bored. I'm so sick of this." And I started crying. I was like, "I really want to go. Please take me to McDonald's, you know." And he just went absolutely ballistic and picked up the ironing board and smashed it to a pulp and was screaming at me, calling me everything under the sun. And I was just frozen in terror. And it just got worse and worse after that. But after that episode, I knew that there were serious problems.
Yeah.
If me asking to go to McDonald's ended up with everything in that room smashed to pieces, I knew that things were escalating, and I felt that it was just a matter of time before maybe I would be hit.
Yeah.
And many, many nights he would just scream at me in a rage and call me everything under the sun. And one of the most heartbreaking things for me at that time, I already had no self-esteem and felt totally worthless. And opening up my front door in the unit block, which was like an kind of like a U-shape. So we had a whole lot of units across the way from us. Sure. Every time I'd open up my door and walk out, I would see everyone's blinds go up and they were peering out at me. And I just remember the shame was horrendous because everyone knew that I was in this abusive relationship, but yet nobody ever came to help me.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I actually prayed for a way out, and my brother was my family couldn't stand this person. My brothers tried to get me away from him. They tried to tell me that, you know, he wasn't good for me. And I had one brother that said to me, he's 14 months younger than me, he said, "If you ever need to get out of there, just ring me any time of the day or night and I'll be over."
Yeah.
And my boyfriend was terrified of this brother because this brother had a really short fuse, and he knew that if my brother went off, so I knew that he was terrified of my brother.
Mm.
And this one particular day, I just about come to the end of it because I couldn't take it any longer. And we went for a drive. I can remember sitting in the back of the shopping centre, and just that morning I'd prayed for a way out, some kind of way out. And he said to me, "I actually want to move, and I want us to take on a new lease at a different place." And our lease was coming up for where we were, and I knew that there was no way that I would be moving into a new place with him. And I just felt this voice say, "This is your if you don't get out now, you'll never get out. And so I had one hand on the door handle and I opened the door and I had one foot out the door and I said, I won't be moving with you. And I started to get out of the car. We were stationary. Thank goodness we were parked because I had been involved in road rage. I'd been a passenger in the seat many, many times when he'd road raged people on the streets.
Yeah.
And I knew that he could do something to me and I was terrified. And he said, okay, if that's what you want to do, you better have your stuff out of my house by the time I get home. And I literally rang my brother and I said,
now,
can you please come now? I have to get my stuff out of there. And we got all my stuff out of there. And about 3 hours later, I was out of there.
Gosh, that's so good.
Best decision I ever made. Mm. 6 months later, I met my husband, who was the type of guy that I always wanted to end up with but never thought I deserved.
Yeah.
And I had somewhat repaired my self-esteem in that 6 months, mm-hmm. or was on the journey to repairing my self-esteem. And, yeah.
So how did you, I guess I'm going to use this word tentatively, fortunate enough that he didn't bother to try and contact you anymore? Because a lot of narcissistic relationships, because you're their fuel to make them feel better. And from my readings and personal experience, they won't let you go until they find someone else for the fuel, because you're taking away what makes them feel good,
yeah.
crushing you and ruining every little inch of self-worth and respect that you have,
yeah.
and more if they can.
Yeah.
Did he attempt to try and contact you or did he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They can't stand to think that anyone would walk away from. Why
yes.
would they? They're, you know, they're fantastic people, yeah. you know, in their own mind. And I had I read something and it was that they crave connection and control from the womb to the room and the cradle to the grave.
Hmm.
So that control, you know, I will have the person that I want. They will not walk away from
How
me.
How dare they?
Yeah. So 2 weeks later, I get this phone call at work one day and he says, oh, hi, it's me. And I'm like... And I'm clearly not saying his name on air for reasons.
Yes.
But hi, it's me. And I'm thinking, what are you ringing me for? It was very clear that I've left you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, I'm back from holidays. I thought we could, you know, I'm just letting you know I'm back from holidays. And I seriously was shaking my head, thinking he just thought we were going. I was just on a bit of a break, and we were going to resume where we left off.
Wow.
And I said, I won't be coming back. Thank you. Never. Never, never, never. And I was scared because I was in Alcoholics Anonymous and I was going to 4 or 5 meetings a week in Sydney and we used to do all the same meetings together. And I said a prayer, please never let me see him again. And I have never laid eyes on him to this day.
Thank goodness.
Since.
Considering,
which was an absolute, just so amazing.
Hmm. Considering the fact that you were going through addictions as well, Alcoholic Anonymous, I can't even talk. it is a miracle that you managed to stay sober with all that going on around you.
Yeah.
So much credit to you. There's no real words that can even express how incredible that is.
Thank you.
And looking after yourself. Even if it was, it's never too late, I think, is what we're trying to get
That's
out
right.
here.
Yes, exactly.
There is hope, but you've just got to go through the hard times and face some things that you may not be ready to yet, but you know deep down in the back of your head you've got to.
Yeah, and I think if women can, I think the big thing that I really want to get out, and I don't even know how to really communicate this, because when you... don't love yourself. I see so many young girls, because I work with girls in schools and young people, that just because of society today and the messages that are sent to them, you know, via media and different messages and signals, they don't love themselves. And because of that, when we don't love ourselves, we will settle.
Mm-hmm.
We will settle for less than, so much less than what we could have, you know, and everyone's been born for such a great purpose and has such great potential, yet self-belief, limiting self-belief, is the thing that holds so many people back. Mm-hmm. And so I would really want to say to every woman out there, you know, despite the things that the negative comments that anyone's ever said to you, put people, find people, seek people out that will build you up. Because 90% of our thoughts are negative, and for every one negative comment, it takes five positive comments to actually negate the one negative comment and get you back to square one. So the most important thing is to find people that are encouraging and that will build you up. Talk to somebody. If you're trapped in a relationship like this, it's to survive and to live, you must talk to someone.
And make sure you talk to the right people. So that was another thing for myself when I was like, I have to say something. I started in a new place and I realized what was happening. I had no idea. That story that you just told me, very, very, very similar. And you can look up emotional abuse and abuse online and you read your entire relationship, which I thought was unique.
Yeah.
That nobody else was experiencing. And I knew that this person was, you know, had issues and had told me, and that was their way in their mind of negating themselves from any, you know, like blame, because it's all my fault if I trigger them.
Yeah.
Or whatever it, they, you know, think in their mind. When you, now you've met your husband at the point of the story that we're at now, obviously trauma bonding and you've gone through so much, it takes time to heal. A lot of people, when they get to that point, to, I guess, relapse back with the no contact and all that sort of stuff. How did you stay afloat, so to speak? Because this lovely man is everything you ever wanted, but in your mind, you're still battling with, you know, I'm not worth it, and used to all these little things that now have become triggers from your previous relationship where he looks at a girl, you know, and you're like, oh, I've got to look better than her or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I've had a lot of healing take place, and you just touched on something that actually was a huge thing that came out of that terrible relationship was when I left that relationship, I left with an insane jealousy problem. Just by his actions, he had a severe pornography addiction, his actions towards other women. He always made me feel less than everyone else, like there was something wrong with me. He told me that all men were like him. So I had this mindset that all men were like him. It was like it was brainwashed into my head for 3 years. So when I met my husband, I actually treated him in the first couple of years the way that I had been treated by my ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
I was expecting him to be exactly like my ex-boyfriend, and it was almost like a self-sabotage. I don't deserve you, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to push you away subconsciously. You have to prove to me that you're not like that. And I actually put him through hell. And I'm so grateful that he stuck out those 2 years. But for years, I had a very, very bad jealousy problem. Mm. Really bad, you know, unlike anything I've ever heard of before. I did have a lot of those self-defeating messages thinking I don't deserve my husband. You know, he's too good for me. But I've done a lot of work on myself. Part of the AA program, it's a 12-step program where we do, you know, you work on yourself and just making those new connections, like I said before, around healthy people, not getting in together with groups with other victims and people who just want to talk about the negative stuff, but people who actually want to help each other move forward. Today I love myself. I've let go of all the shame of the past, and that's not a, oh, I'm great, I love myself, but I love the person that I am inside today. And I can honestly say that I don't have any jealousy problems anymore. I was full of anger when I met my hubby. I don't have any anger anymore. It's like I don't have fear. All these things have dropped away, and obviously I've had a long time to heal. But healing definitely is possible, and it is a journey. It is a process. You touched on something because I've got an awesome husband, but I mean, everybody sometimes yells, you know, and, sure. and has moments where they where they lose it. And if I hear anyone yelling, it takes me straight back.
It's a trigger.
To when I was 18. Mm. Straight back. Yes, it is a trigger. Straight back. And so what I have to tell myself then, I'm not in that situation anymore. And I'm safe when triggers happen to us. Having a backup plan of how we're going to think and perceive about the current situation is so important, because the past is not our reality anymore.
Yeah. One thing a lot of people also wonder, and even myself at the time when I was coming to terms with that I had been in, I was like, no, it can't be. And then they just called out my life story and I realised I was.
Yeah.
And I said to this psychologist, can people change? Because he would always say, and from hearing people's stories like yourself, other people say the same thing, that, I promise I won't do it again. I promise if you say, I will not do it again. Can they change? Or is it if they want to, like anyone in an addiction? I mean, what's wrong with them? And again, it's general because no one's diagnosed them or whatever. I guess they know themselves that they're angry, traumatized, negative people that enjoy it. They have to know that. But are they capable of that change? Is there any hope without encouraging people to stay in these relationships very carefully as I say that?
Yeah, there's so much hope. You know, there's definitely hope. I think particularly, though, with narcissists, that behaviour is so ingrained from, you know, events, I think, and trauma. There's different beliefs, but the main belief is that narcissists become that way as a result of things that happen after they're born. Mm. So I guess keeping in mind that they're actually damaged people themselves. Mm. But with narcissism, it's a very hard thing to overcome because they actually never believe that they're the problem.
Yeah.
And they don't actually believe that they have to change. They believe that everyone else has to change. And they will just move on and on and on and on and on to the next victim or person that will accept their behaviour because they don't believe there's anything wrong with them. But for victims, there's definitely change. I've seen so many people that have come out of these types of relationships, learnt to value themselves and gone on to have the most amazing lives.
So it's just a matter of finding the right people and ignoring people. Like I had someone, I told you before we started this conversation, like, oh, he must really hated you, when I explained all the things that he had done. And fortunately, I was in the mindset not to, and I'm sure that something like that could have had me, you know, hurt myself.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, after all this and I'm trying to have that self-worth, I'm trying to, you know, explain to someone that I work with and that's the remark that they come out with, you know. I guess you've just got to be really careful who you have that conversation with, because they could inadvertently, I mean, I'm sure he and his selfish little world had no intention of hurting me so deeply. That's because these people don't understand stories like the one that you just told me. They think it's unfathomable, or it has to be, you know, nowhere near as bad. But these people, you know, behind closed doors, this is extremely common. That you've just told me.
And nobody understands unless they've actually been in that situation.
Yeah.
That's why I run Stories of Hope, because all the people that get up and share their stories, they're sharing real stories of overcoming the most difficult times in their life and coming out the other side. Now, every person that comes into a Stories of Hope event knows, if they're going through that same thing, that the person that's speaking understands the pain that they're going through because they've been through it themselves. But the difference between somebody that recovers from trauma and who doesn't is all about, look, some people need medication, but a fantastic tool to recovery is cognitive behaviour therapy, and that's something that I do in my counselling practice with my clients, and that's all based around our thoughts, feelings and actions. Mm-hmm. Now, we all have self-defeating beliefs, but it's the way we live our life perceiving those beliefs. And when they're triggered, what happens? How do we feel? And if that's out of control, our actions are going to be out of control. So it's reframing the way that we believe, or the reframing how we think about those beliefs that have defeated us through our life. So perception is everything, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. So
it all starts in the thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if someone listening now has had maybe the penny drop that themselves or someone that they love, like a lot of these signs that they might be in a relationship from a distance, being like, well, in my situation, to explain where I'm going to ask you this question, a lot of people told me, leave. There's no way. Like one of my old bosses said, there's no way you can possibly take him back. You can't do it. This is it. All right, Emma, we'll do this. And then a week later, I took him back. And, you know, the look on their faces and all that sort of stuff. And I knew. I didn't realize to the extent that it was emotional abuse and you could look up my life story. I knew it was wrong. I knew all this sort of stuff. But from the trauma bonding where I'm now bonded to this person through the lack of self-worth and all that sort of stuff, I felt like financially at that time I couldn't leave. And I had nowhere to go, and he'd made me feel so crappy about my career and all that sort of stuff that nobody on God's green earth is going to hire me. And in doing the jobs that we do, they're very hard to come by as it is on a good day with a good mental health. From a person that's sitting back, like my friend, like my old boss, how can they assist? Can they assist? What should they do? Should they not give up? I mean, he to a degree gave up. He was very happy when I finally did leave. It took a very long time. Unfortunately, I left with, you know, my sanity and without hurting myself. And now I'm in a very happy, healthy place and able to brush off idiots like the one I discussed that, you know, thought, it's really bad. He must hate you. What can they do? Can they do anything? You know, friends watching their good friend that they think is going into and is in a relationship like this.
Yes.
Can they do something?
I guess they can just keep speaking the truth.
Okay.
The truth, the fact that I kept listening to my brother, mm-hmm. even though I was in this relationship and I felt trapped in it,
yeah.
the fact that my brother had given me a way out and said, I'm there for you, back then I wasn't seeing a counsellor or anything like that. But if somebody from that unit block had come out and said to me, I can hear what's going on with you, you know, can I help you? I would have probably called out to them for help. I probably would have asked them secretly to help me. And I think that a lot of people are terrified of stepping into the middle of abuse that's going on, for many different reasons, but I think continuing to talk to your friend about, you know, the fact that you may see a problem, what you can see from the outside, and to just say, know that I'm there for you. There's a lot of, you know, telephone counselling. There's apps now on your phone where you can reach out if you're in that situation and you can actually talk to someone without revealing who you are online and getting counselling over the phone. So definitely, I think that the more friends and people in somebody's life that's living in abusive relationships speak up to them and say, hey, got a sense of what's going on, know that that's not normal behaviour, know that what you're living in is not normal, and that, you know, we're here for you. There is a way out. People need to know that there is another alternative on the outside
and
of that.
Even if they're not surrounded by, I guess, the people that can help, and in my situation, everyone was too far away, knowing that you can do it yourself and that these phone numbers were people that really, truly understand and can give you the tools that you need to prepare yourself mentally, physically, everything, financially, whatever you need to do to get out, it is there.
Yeah, it's very the hard thing is that when you've been in a relationship like that, your belief systems that set in, And so it's really hard to talk to yourself when you're fragile and try and tell yourself, oh, no, this isn't true, because you actually start to believe the brainwashing that's actually happened. Mm. So that's why it's important to have people on the outside that are prepared to speak up and speak in, because they're speaking truth. Mm. And it gives another perspective other than the skew-if thinking that, for instance, that I had developed, and the insular thinking that I had developed. Mm. And, I mean, I do want to also mention, I think this is really important to mention, because we've been talking about our relationships with, you know, boyfriends. I do want to mention that it's not just males that are abusers, that there are, you know, also males that are victims of abusive relationships. But the statistics are that there's a lot more females as victims. But I do want to acknowledge that, because there are some men out there who are also going through this, and they need to know that there's help as well.
And emotional abuse can be in friendships and even workplace, between a boss, say, for example, and an employee, using them to obviously their advantage, I guess, is probably the best way of saying it.
Yeah.
It's very varied, but it can happen to you, because a lot of other people wanted to get your thoughts on this. I see it all the time, especially on things like Facebook in the comments, where you read a story that woman, you know, stayed, blah, 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 and these terrible things had happened. And then you say, well, they must be an idiot. You know, they must be a dumb person to put up with this.
Yeah.
That's not true at all. I know that I'm not speaking and trying to say that I'm a really smart person, but I'm not an idiot. And I would like to say that you're not either. You're very smart. And if anyone's been listening for the last hour, intelligent woman, was incredibly, I think, again, if I use the word brave, it's just not the right word, because what you've said is exceptional.
Yeah.
To share such a tremendously confronting, and as you said, the story is going to trigger a lot of people. That doesn't make you an idiot at all. You were empathetic, and you felt that you had no way out.
And I think a lot of people that are in these relationships too, and again, I'm talking from experience and people that I've counselled, are empathetic type people. And sometimes I've always seen myself over my life as a rescuer. I was the family rescuer. I saw myself as the one who had to look after my two brothers when my mum was, you know, an alcoholic, and my dad was off at work and my mum was suicidal. And so sometimes there's a trait with people who go into these relationships of also thinking, this person needs me and maybe I can help change them.
I understand them.
Yes. And I kept thinking, well, maybe he'll change. Maybe I can help him change. Mm. But I couldn't help him at all. And I guess I finally realised that.
Yeah.
But I went to the White Ribbon Domestic Violence Forum and stood on the sand, you know, about 3 months ago, and saw with the pairs of shoes on the sand, and there were some pairs of men's shoes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just to think that many of those women stayed in those relationships and they died as a result.
Hmm.
So trying to get out is going to have a much better outcome for your life than staying, because if you are experiencing abuse presently and you stay, you will continue to experience abuse and it will get worse. Hmm. Whereas if you leave, you have a fantastic and fabulous chance of a greater life on the outside. It's just making that initial step, recognizing the signs and making that initial step.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. It is, I feel like an idiot for not having the right words, but I really don't think that there is enough. Saying it's brave seems very inadequate. It doesn't do it justice in this environment. Oh, they're so brave. It's beyond words what you've experienced, and a lot of this behind closed doors, and people that would have been not your close friends obviously would have known, but people just at work and all that, they would have no comprehension of what you've struggled through. And as I said at the beginning, what you have been through, many other people would have been in those shoes on the sand four, five, 50 times over.
Yeah.
So all power to you, mate.
Thank you, Emma. Thanks so much for the opportunity today to share my story. And I think that there's nothing like lived experience to be able to, you know, share with other people what I've been through, and that there is definitely hope and light at the end of the tunnel.
That was episode one of the first series of Emotional Abuse, A Conversation, chatting with Kerry Atherton, founder of Empower Life Solutions and Stories of Hope Australia. Kerry's also an inspirational speaker and addictions recovery mental health coach counsellor. Series one discusses emotional abuse in romantic relationships. To hear the rest of this series and series two, which delves into emotional abuse when it comes from family members, Google Emotional Abuse, A Conversation, or check out both series on iTunes.